Well, now I have a little story about the main speaker. One of my very first meetings at the church, I came in and he was wearing a beanie, and I think you were wearing your Teen Spirit shirt.
That smells like.
Yeah, and I was like, all right, well, maybe this is, I don't know. I mean, this guy looks kind of, you know, run down anyway, so maybe. But let me tell you, I learned real quick that you don't judge anybody, because I've learned a lot from you, Kevin, and I am so honored for you to talk to me.
Hi, everybody. Kevin Alcoholic. Thanks very much for having me speak. I really do appreciate it, and I love you to death. That was fantastic. One more round of applause for her. She hates this. All right, real quick, if you follow me on social media, or if you know me at all, you know I like quotes. I think everything's been said before, and I have a huge ego, so I always wanted to have the quotes come out of my mouth, but I found out real quick that I'm not going to say anything that's new, and so I love quotations. I do them every day on social media. This is one from the famous mystic Hermann Hesse. I'm beginning to hear the teachings of my blood pulsing within me. My story isn't pleasant. It's not sweet and harmonious like the invented stories. It tastes of folly and bewilderment, of madness and dream, like the life of all peoples who no longer want to lie to themselves. That's me. All right, there's one more. Veronica Roth, life damages us, everyone. But now I am also learning this. We can be mended. We mend each other. That's this place. And when I first came in this place, I'm going to do this and then I'll go to my story. When I first came in this place, you guys were really ugly. You guys were gross looking. I wasn't sure if you'd have showered. I don't know what the hell you guys were doing, but I did not belong here. I learned as I went along that it was just a mirror of myself. I was so rotten inside. I was so sad. I'm a crier, and it comes out of nowhere. So just bear with me. I can't even predict it. Sometimes it's during a joke. But I had to learn really quickly that I had a lot of work to do. And as I've been surrounded by the most beautiful people I've ever had in my life to do the work, you guys are gorgeous. This place is gorgeous. I have a lot of reverence for this room and this podium. My first meeting was a podium meeting. And I think I got my newcomer's chip, and I gave a 20-minute talk then. Hopefully it's better tonight than it was then. All right. Let's start from the top. Oh, how long do I have?
You got plenty of time.
Okay. 45. You sure you didn't hear me talking?
Yes.
poor Lisa went through that at dinner. I can talk. All right. I was born in New Jersey, and a lot of people say that's enough reason to be an alcoholic, but that is not why I was alcoholic. My parents, I was born to two fantastic people. My father was a stockbroker his whole life, and as a young man, he wanted to experience Wall Street, and that's why they were out in New Jersey. And I was the firstborn, and so once they had me, they got themselves back to California, where I was raised. In elementary school, I was pretty close to perfect. I got good grades. I had a lot of friends. I was still cute back then. And elementary school, I was everything my parents could have hoped for, I believe. And of course, it's so funny when you tell your story, because you find out your perspective is so off sometimes. You talk to your parents and your siblings, and everyone has a different version of it, but this is mine. I had a lot of confidence. Everything was really happening for me. And then junior high hit. Junior high was incredibly confusing for me. It started, it started when it was basketball tryouts, and it was the first team I didn't make. And I started having those thoughts in my head. Well, you know, you're a loser. The internal dialogue really hit me in junior high school. Everyone seemed to be maturing. They were getting hair under their armpits. I looked like I was in the body of an 8-year-old girl, and I didn't know how to get out of it. My friends were starting to experiment with alcohol and drugs. I was nowhere near that. I I was just nowhere near that at that point. They were starting to socialize with girls in the way that men and women eventually become, and I was not ready for that. It was all extremely confusing for me. My grades dropped. First time in my life, I started isolating. I definitely wasn't drinking yet. We'll get into the type of alcoholic I am, and I think it's important to say, because you don't hear the type that I am all the time. So I made it through junior high school just completely confused, and I felt less than on every level. I hit high school, and I was really terrified, mainly because I heard you have to take showers after PE, and I still had no hair under my armpits. And these guys were getting muscles, and I was just a little kid. I think I had a 28-inch waist. And I really started to isolate then. While everyone else was playing hooky to go have fun at someone's house or go to the parks and drink, I was playing hooky to go into my neighbor's backyard, who I knew worked in the day, and just sit and wait till I knew that I could come out and know that school was over. I just didn't fit in with anyone. I wasn't willing to do the work to fit in with anyone. I had the negative talk in my head, so it was easier just to sit in someone's darn backyard than to face the world at that point. I didn't understand why everyone around me seemed to be great and maturing, and my family was of high achievers. My dad played Division I basketball. He was a stud. My mom was the blonde bombshell sorority girl, and here was their firstborn. Both my sisters were lead cheerleaders and playing great sports, and I didn't know where I fit in. I didn't know how to do the work to fit in, and so I just isolated. I started to drink a little bit in high school, definitely not alcoholically. But I did start to drink a little bit in high school. Some of my friends who were popular would bring me to a party. I remember my first drink. I remember it wasn't like so many people talk about it. I still didn't feel comfortable. I liked the buzz. I liked the feeling. But I was a little bit scared of it. And as a lot of you know, drugs aren't part of my story. And it's mostly out of fear. I didn't do drugs because I thought I would die or whatnot. I think it was my higher power protecting me, because I would have loved them. The way that they get explained, I would have been a coke fiend because it would have allowed me to drink longer. But drugs aren't a part of my life, and that's probably a certain percentage on why it took me till I was 48 years old to get here, but also why I'm still alive. One of those two things. I would have got here quicker or I would have died. I didn't give my sobriety date. My sobriety date's 2017. January 25th, so I got 7 years. So high school ends, and in my family, you go to college. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I didn't want anything to do with college. I didn't like school. I liked a paycheck. I liked to work, and I liked to get a paycheck. Your grade cards, grade reports didn't mean anything to me. It didn't mean much, and they were always bad news anyway. They forced me, back then it was typewriters, they forced me to learn how to use the typewriter really well, because I had to change the D to a B. And so you closely get the typewriter and your grade card before your parents get it, use a little whiteout, and then try and change the grade, which is ridiculous. They caught me every time. Obviously I'm already starting to lie. So I have to go to college, but I had nowhere near the grades to go to college at that point. So it's off to junior college for me. I went to West Valley Junior College in Saratoga, beautiful campus. And I'm just going through the motions. I'm a total robot at this point. I'm just whatever you want me to do. Who knows who Kevin is, because Kevin doesn't exist. Kevin's just whatever you tell him he is and whatever you need him to do. But I did have a little bit of an awareness. I had an awareness that I was going nowhere. And I wanted to go somewhere. I didn't want to be nothing. I didn't want to. I felt so, I don't know what other word, pathetic. And I knew I needed to bust out of that. I was getting glimmers of that it was time to do something. I was drinking more in these times, but I wouldn't define it as alcoholically yet. But I asked my parents. I got up the I got up the will, and I think this was my higher power, because I would have never asked something like this of them. I just wanted to be invisible. But I asked them if I could go spend a year in London and study at the University of London. And they were desperate for me to do something too. They were like, anything. And so they said yes before it was out of my mouth. That was the first thing I would call a pivot point for me in life. I went off to London. I didn't know anyone. My mom had done my homework for me. My mom had done my laundry for me, cooked me every meal. I go off to London where I got to do all that stuff for myself. And at the same time, I don't know anyone there. Out of my comfort zone, scared to death. And it was the best experience I needed at that time. I needed to be shaken loose. I needed some space in my life, because I did feel like a robot, to start finding out who I am, you know, what I want in life. Is that Mary Ann? Oh my God. That will make me cry. I didn't see you. So I'm off in London. I'm really starting to drink because I'm legal there, so we can go to town. And I had this roommate. This roommate was classic. He's probably in these rooms somewhere. He was a son of a preacher, and he was rebelling against everything his parents ever did. So he was, at one point, he was sleeping with his eyes open. I didn't know what those paper things he was always putting on his tongue were, but they were doing something. I lost a lot of my innocence, and I lost a lot of my innocence that had to go away. I needed to experience life. I needed to do things on my own. I needed to have some real hard responsibilities. I needed to take care of myself. And I came back from that experience a completely different person. Not totally. Because my mom informed me when I got home that I got into Cal Poly, that she applied for me for and chose my major and chose everything for me. So I was off to Cal Poly. And I was a robot again, right back to Cal Poly. But at least I had had a lot of maturation go on in that year. And I went to Cal Poly a different person. And I joined a fraternity. If you want to see my fraternity, it's easy. Just rent the movie Animal House. It's enjoyable, and it'll give you a list of. We were the heaviest drinking guys on the campus. We were the misfits. We were, you know, most guys in the fraternity were perfect haircut, perfect clothes, come from a. We were the misfits. I wore my hair really long. I was a DJ at the alternative rock radio, trying to be as cool as possible. And Cal Poly was a lot of fun, but I really started drinking. And I became president of that fraternity because I was the one guy in the fraternity that didn't do drugs. And so I could talk to the cops at midnight. I was most likely to be able to talk to the cops at midnight when our parties got broken up and when trouble was happening, and so I became president of that fraternity. And I'm going to tell a little story from that, and then I'll close that up a little bit later, how important it was. But on our Christmas party, the president relinquishes his duties to the vice president, and he becomes Santa Claus. And the deal with becoming Santa Claus is that every gift given that night, if it's alcohol, Santa has to take a shot. That's a lot. So you get to pick two young ladies, and they get to be your elves, and they can help you with those shots. Thank God. So it goes through the party, and of course, very, very quickly, I'm a munchkin. It doesn't take much for me. I was hammered. Well, someone else in that party was also hammered. He was one of our members, and he was already hammered. And he decided it would be a really good idea to fill a 64-ounce big gulp cup with Wild Turkey 101 and show everyone he could drink it in just a few gulps. And he did that. He accomplished that. And he did it in front of four people, and he immediately collapsed. And those four people were so loving and so on the spot that they immediately threw him in the back of a truck and got him to the hospital, which was, my fraternity was on California Boulevard, and so Sierra Vista is right around the corner, so it was not a long ride. And I, unbeknownst to me, because I'm hammered, the cops come, they had their letters on, so the nurses sent the cops over to the house, everything hits the fan. I don't even know about it, I'm already passed out by that. At that point, I don't know what's happening. I wake up, to the news, and when I say the news of what happened, and also the news, the world exploded on me because I was the president of that fraternity, and I was asked to go for questioning down at the police station several times. I made the front page of the newspaper because of this instance. My whole life changed. Mind you, this person who did this was 21. He was not a pledge. It was on his own whole volition. But as you, many of you know, that they want to take down fraternities and they want any instance, and we gave them a gigantic instance. And so we were, I was in a bunch of deep doo-doo. I didn't realize how much until the Cal Poly president and the board brought me in, and they said, first thing they said is, we decided that we're not gonna expel you. And I went, oh my God, that was an option. I had no, it was a whirlwind. The news was constantly around, the cops all the time. I ended up, to avoid it all, I had a futon, and I would scrunch the futon up like a taco, and I would, and then I had a covering over it, and I would lay in there like it was a tent, hammered, and listen to the people who needed me come in and out of my room, and I pretended like I wasn't there. I was drinking all the time, constantly. I was stressing. My parents didn't understand what was happening because my dad said, back in my day, that was nothing. Hear what we did? So I was lost. It was a storm for a long time. My grades plummeted. I just wanted out of college. I wanted out of that experience. I wanted to isolate again, and I couldn't because the heat was definitely down on me. I had to publicly, in the city, quit my presidentship, humbling, very humbling experience, and give it over to someone else. I had to leave with my tail between my legs. It was hell. And I was pissed because I didn't do it. I had nothing, you know, in my mind, I didn't do it. And this guy just got off scot-free. He had every chance in the world to say, it was me who did it, get off these guys, but he never did. He just sulked away and let me to take the heat. It was horrible. And my end of my college, I was almost done by that point. I got a couple more quarters. I just kind of got done and got out of there. And it kind of ruined my whole college experience to a certain extent, scared the hell out of me. But one member did come up to me and say, you'll be happy one day that this is happening to you now, not when you're off, you know, when you're 40 years old with two kids and three kids, and you just learn what you can from it. That was I'll never forget that. That kind of made me. But in the moment, it was hell. So I leave and I graduate and I go back to San Jose, and I'm dating my soon-to-be wife, who is my high school sweetheart. We stay together through all these things, and I couldn't stand San Jose anymore. At that point, the dot-com had hit, and I wanted to own a house one day. So I talked my ex-wife into following me back to San Luis Obispo, where my friend from college was opening up a bar, Mother's Tavern, if you guys know it. And I was gonna manage that for him because he knew my background of bartending my way through school, and what a great job for an alcoholic. Whew, that was an awesome job for it. Not only did I drink every day that I worked there, it was encouraged, so it wasn't a big deal. And man, the things I did drunk, the responsibilities I had, that was quite something. Amber knows how busy it was wherever she went. She used to come in. But that place was busy and it was fun. But my alcoholism was crazy. I would wake up in the morning. I cannot drink tonight. I'm a wreck. I cannot drink tonight. I'm not going to do it tonight. And wake up the next day, my wife staring at me, stinking. I could not hold the smell back. Every pore, I was just disgusting. She was at her wit's end. She didn't know what to do with me. We had one and then two kids at that time. Finally, by the grace of God, I had my first DUI coming home from Mother's Tavern, which I did every night. And at this point, we lived in Santa Maria, so it wasn't just a small drive. I got pulled over. I was doing 96 by Pismo, so I got enhancements, and I had to do weekends in county, which was really good for me. Very humbling when your wife shows up in a minivan with two young, loving kids, so happy to see you, and you're sauntering out of jail. It's very humbling. And at that point, my type of alcoholism, at that point, I was an everyday drinker because it was an everyday life. I was in a bar, but I'm not necessarily an everyday drinker. I can quit all the time. I can quit. I have no problem quitting at all. At this point, I quit for 4.5 years. My problem is staying quit. I cannot stay quit. There's no way. I'm just looking for that little edge and when I can start drinking again, that little thing. When things get good again, when the heat's off me, I want to get drunk again. Let me say one more thing. I would wake up every morning smelling with my wife just pissed at me. And I remember one morning she woke me up. Kevin, get up. I'm like, oh God, here we go again. And she goes, Kevin, the Twin Towers got attacked. And I went, thank God, because that take the heat off me this morning. That's how bad I was. I was happy that the Twin Towers got attacked because I didn't have to hear my wife yelling at me for being drunk again. That's how low it takes us. So I quit for 4.5 years. We end up with 3 children. And I'm doing okay. I pretty much am a dry drunk. I really know in the back of my head there's no solution for me. Eventually I'm going to drink again. And my middle child, my son, ends up being very good at soccer. And it's pretty exciting. I love sports and I'm enjoying raising the family. I'm not enjoying my wife, but I'm enjoying raising the family. And he gets good at soccer. And so they said, your kid's going to be on a club team. I don't know what club teams are, but I'm all for it. You know, whatever he can do to, and he loves it. So we do that. So we have our first tournament away, which was in Camarillo. And I kind of look around and I go, but I don't do anything in that tournament. The second tournament, I go, my wife ain't around. No one's around. This kid's 9 years old. He's not gonna know. I can drink again, and it's gonna be good. I'm only gonna do it on these tournaments. It'll be perfect. He'll have a tournament once a month, twice a month, and I'm gonna drink after the games are over in the hotel room, and that's what I did. Well, no one was around to tell me that it's a progressive disease back then. Oh, I forgot to tell you, when I got my first DUI, I had to come into these rooms 6 times, and I can't even tell you what happened in those rooms. I know I sat over there, right by the door, so I could skedat. But I don't remember one thing that was said. It was so strange. My ears, I'm sure that maybe some Billy might have been in here at the time. Who knows? I don't know anyone who was in here. I got my court card signed, and I was out. That's important. So the second tournament, I start drinking, and then it gets progressive. And so I was working at a corporate job at the time, and I had business trips. And so I said, well, the business trips are the same deal. I'll work in the day and then drink at night. I'm the type of alcoholic that maybe wasn't drinking all the time and could stop. But once that stuff hits my mouth, it's unexplainable to me. I cannot stop for anything. I will do anything to get more alcohol. I will break any law. I will harm anyone. I will shame anything. I don't care about anything. I have to have my fill, and my fill is very hard to judge because it's never enough. And so I'm doing this, and eventually the soccer tournaments and the business trips are not enough. I need to start inventing business trips. And I had an office in Orchid, and so I would tell my wife at the time that I had a business trip when I didn't, and I would drink in my office in Orchid. So now I'm full blown back into it. She knows, like I said, I smell when I drink, I stink. And so as much as I did it, and I couldn't hide that from her, and she knew it, but I think that she was so worn out at the time that, she just maybe potentially, she'd give me some crap sometimes. She knew, I know you're drinking. And I said, no, of course not. No, I'm not drinking. But she knew, but she was just kind of over it. She was over disciplining a child of a husband and someone that she was probably scared to, like, what is going on? And she's very much like my mother. It's more about appearance than it is about what's really going on. So she said, well, if we can just fake that we're a great family and that everything's going fine, then I'll just buy into it. I'm not gonna even worry about it anymore. And our relationship really started to split, sadly. So one night, I'm drinking in my office, faking a business trip, and I get a text from her, and I look at the text, and it says, where are you really? And that sent a shiver down my spine. I'm like, what the heck? I'm caught. How do I get out of this? I'm already drunk. How do I get out of this? How do I lie again? And so my solution was to jump in my car and to go where I was supposed to be. And that location was the Mojave Desert. And so I hopped in my car and I headed out towards the Mojave Desert. If anyone's been on 166, just find a place on 166 between here and Bakersfield that's safely you can go off the road. There's not very many. There's very few. I made it all the way to Highway 5, that interchange right there, 166, and got smashed by a semi truck, and it sent my car reeling into an agriculture field. I didn't know what happened. I had no idea what had happened. I was drunk, but I was really tired, and so I probably just fell asleep and then just right into the semi truck. And I got out of the car. It took me forever to get out of the car and figure out what the heck had happened. And I got out of the car and I looked around, and I had this strange peace come over me. Like, oh, it's over. There's no lie I can tell. There is no story I can make up. There is nothing I can do to get out of this situation. I am toast, and thank the Lord I'm toast. Now, mind you, I didn't have any idea if I just killed a family of four. I had no idea what had happened. I didn't know if there was people all over the highway at that point that I had just killed. I had no idea. Luckily, it was just a semi truck that had nailed me, and I really do pray that he's okay with that, and I didn't cause him any trauma. But what I've been told in these rooms by a lot of truck drivers is that it's part of the job, and they don't really care as long as everyone's okay. It's just something that they have to deal with, which blows my mind. But I felt really guilty about that. So I spend the night in jail, and I get picked up. I'm in Bakersfield. I get picked up and I go back home to Santa Maria, and I'm at a crossroads. I'm at a major crossroads because I have a choice to make. I said, if my family sticks with me, I'll try and find sobriety. I don't know where that is, but I'll try and find sobriety. If they don't stick with me, I'm doing alcoholism exactly like I've always wanted to do it, every day, all the way long, and I'll take it until the end. And I was serious about that. And I wasn't scared. I was relieved that I'd hit this. I don't have to lie about it. I can either do it or not do it. My family stuck with me, and so now that gave me a lot of responsibility. I had to find a plan. My first plan was to come to these rooms. I'd been here before, obviously, on the court card. I had to come to these rooms, and I made my wife at the time come with me because I had to show her how horrific these rooms were, how pathetic you people were. And I mean this. I'm not saying it anymore. I had to show her how bad this program was, and that if I was gonna get sober, I was not gonna relinquish my hope, my love for life, and my humor. I was not gonna be like you people with a cup of coffee here, a cigarette here, and holding on for dear life. Not like you guys. You guys are like that. And that doesn't appeal to me. That doesn't appeal to me at all. And so I came in, and it was Glenn's podium meeting. He's had to hear this 35 times, and he still shows up. I sat right where Matt is sitting. My wife sat next to me. It was the birthday chip meeting. Jessica was the chip chick, and she was cracking jokes, and everyone's coming up, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, this is where I get sentimental, because you guys flipped it on me. You guys freaking flipped it on me. All those preconceptions I had was because I was so damn scared there wasn't a solution for me. And so I made you guys out to be hell on earth, because I didn't want the responsibility of having to do the work. I wanted to somehow get sober, but not that way. And I didn't even know what that way was. I didn't even know what it was. And you guys flipped it on me. You guys surrounded me. You guys filled me with so much damn hope and so much damn love that it was undeniable. My wife and I skipped out of here that night. And I couldn't get back fast enough the next day. I couldn't get back. I had the schedule. I was, in fact, that DUI that I had where I got blasted by the semi got pleaded down. This is about getting good representation. Got pleaded down to a wet and reckless. And they didn't even give me AA. They didn't do anything. I'm like, that's pretty irresponsible now that I think about it. I'm like, I didn't get anything. I got off scot-free. But I, as put by another member, this is not me, years later, if anyone knows Catherine, her father's in the program too, Joe, if you know Joe. And Joe said, was it difficult for you to get sober? And Catherine said it. She's all, he was ready. I was done with alcohol. I was over. I wanted alcohol out of my life. I just needed you guys to show me how. And I didn't think it was going to be you guys. I did not think. And so that started a repetition in my life now that has gone on for the last 7 years. That is, everything I think gets flipped on me in the most beautiful, loving way. And that was the first night. You guys surrounded me, gave me your phone numbers, and I was off and running. I remember I went to every meeting I could. I worked, so in the evening. And there was not a Wednesday meeting, and there was not a Saturday night meeting. And I would show up at the door every time, even though I knew it. And I go, oh, there's no meeting. I would wonder what to do with myself. Because I loved it so much. It had got ingrained in me so much. So I was going to meetings, but I was afraid that I was, what time we got here? I was on the outside. I was really quiet, believe it or not, at the time. I really get quiet until you earn my trust, whatever that trust is. So I was really quiet. I wasn't sharing. It took me 3 months to actually share. It was Joe Kay over here who made me share one night, and I puked all over this place. I'm probably still cleaning it up. I let my whole story loose on this place because I was so ready. But I didn't know how to become part of the herd. And I knew that I wouldn't be around long if I didn't get part of the herd. Because once things, like my old pattern was, once things get good, once things return to a normalcy, I'll go out. I don't have a long-term solution. So I knew that the long-term solution was to do what a lot of you guys are doing and get part of the herd. That was back when this place had coffee mugs, not the styrofoam cups. I'm a big advocate for bringing those coffee mugs back because it gave me, I would run to the back after the meeting ended. I would bolt to the back to wash those coffee mugs because you guys had to hand them to me and I got to talk to you and you to introduce yourself. And I got to know everyone by washing those mugs. In fact, one meeting, Glenn beat me. He's the only person that could beat me, and I shouted him out of there. I thought all you guys had 25 years when I came in. I didn't realize you had 2 years more, or 1 year more than me or something. And I thought, you're an old timer. Yeah, I need this more than you. And I did. And I was so desperate for that job because I wanted to meet you guys. I wanted to be part of this so bad. And I didn't have the courage or the guts to put myself out there. So I'm telling you, if you're a newcomer, put yourself out there. These people want to love on you so bad. And sometimes they strangely come at you, but not always. You got to go to them sometimes. And put yourself out there. It's a warm and loving group. And if at all, even a teensy bit as scared as I was, it's a false scare. You need to get right smack in the middle of this thing because it's the best place to be. So I'm doing my thing, and I'm going to a lot of meetings. But I noticed that the people that have what I really want have done the steps, but I don't think I need the steps. The meetings are enough. Reading the book is enough. Hanging out with you guys is enough. But as longer I go on, I realize that I need the steps. And I'm going to go over, I'm a weird spirituality in this thing, so I hope I don't turn anyone off. But so first, I was sick and tired. And I wanted a major change, but I didn't want to do the work for a major change. I just wanted a major change. I wanted you guys to take me in the back room, tell me the secret of how to get sober, slap me on the ass, and I'm on my way. And I found out real quick that that doesn't work. that night when I got out of that car, I felt so calm when I got out of that car because the prior version of Kevin, the version of Kevin that existed up to that point, had died that night. I didn't know it. That person was gone that night, and a new Kevin was being born. And it really showed through AA and coming to the meetings that I was rebirthing to someone different, someone that I was more proud of, someone that I was starting to be able to trust. Because, man, I was such a liar, and I was hiding everything in my life. I didn't know what to trust about myself. I hated myself. But I was starting, the Kindle was being fired, and I was starting to figure out that I was a halfway decent guy. But I didn't know how to properly give the previous version of myself who tried hard, was just stuck in this miserable disease and didn't know how to get out of it. I did not hate that person. I love that person too. And I look back on that person and it's so lost. And if I can go back and shake him, but I needed everything to happen the way it did for that to happen. So the only way that I could properly bury that version of Kevin and give him the respect he needed and give him the hope that he had was to go through the 12 steps. The 12 steps were really how I could really properly move on. And so I did the 12 steps. My sponsor at the time, admittedly, this is from his mouth, was not a good sponsor. And going through the 12 steps with him showed that. He was not prepared for that. I wasn't, when I got to step three, I wasn't feeling anything. Step one, two, three became a check mark to me. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't see their importance. I just wanted to get to the meat and potatoes. He was kind of lost in how to lead me through that. And so I'm a people pleaser and I don't like change. I knew I had to change sponsors, and that was really horrific for me. I spent a lot of sleepless nights, like I was breaking up with a girl. And I didn't want to let anyone down and blah, blah, blah. So finally I had the guts to tell him I needed to move on. And he's like, dang, I thought you did that months ago. That's how close we were. And I found a sponsor that had a lot more of what I wanted, and he lovingly led me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did it the best I possibly could. I did it with the most honesty and the most courage I possibly could, and I completed them, and everything changed. Everything changed really fast. I was driving down Broadway, and it was in the middle of a work day, and I was just nonchalant looking around, you know, beautiful Broadway, people jaywalking, you're avoiding them, and other cars coming down, and people going 10 miles an hour. And everything, like if you guys are old enough, you know the Viewmasters where you're looking at the slides and you go, and it goes to the next slide, and you usually get them at Disneyland or someplace like that. My life did a Viewmaster switch, and I felt it. It was really quick, and it went, and this whole aura came over me. And something said to me, I don't know what it was, and it said, you're going to be okay. And I didn't think I was. My whole life, I didn't think I was going to be okay. But what do you call that, a psychic shift? You call that a come to Jesus moment? I don't know what the heck it was, but it physically switched. I looked down at the car radio. I know you don't have to look to hear, but I did anyway. I looked at the car radio to see if it was the same song on. That's how significant the shift meant. What a blessing that was. It didn't happen when I was surfing or climbing some crazy mountain. It happened on Broadway in the middle of the day. So you never know when that thing's coming. And I was off and running. I was off and running. The spirit of whatever you want to call it, God, source, the universe, let me know that I was going to be okay. And I really felt that it wasn't lying. And so I don't know how to replicate that. I don't know how to do it other than the 12 steps and the love of some people. But what I have been able to find in this program was something that I didn't think existed for me, something that I think that would always be out of reach, and that is long-lasting sobriety, and I have the potential for that now. The hard part is, and the hard part that you guys have showed me and I've seen through some people, is that if I quit doing this program, if I quit putting the gas, you know, putting the foot to the gas, I can lose that in a second. I've watched it happen. Some of the most people that I think are the most in tune, the most right there in this program, all of a sudden they're gone and they're out. And I had one person look at me and said, God left. And I pushed him out and he left so quick. And the fear in his eyes, I know it can leave really quick in an instant. And so I stay as close as I can. I have had times where, especially COVID, I did not like Zoom. I need to be in an alcoholics meeting where you guys can give me a hug, or where we can hold hands, or where we can feel each other's energy. I can feel part of the community. Zoom didn't do that for me, so I did take the foot off my gas during COVID. But I stayed close to my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, broke a lot of the stupid rules, and did what it took during COVID. So if I took it off at all, it was during then. I have a new sponsor now. And I don't look around for a sponsor that has exactly what I need anymore. I don't look around for a sponsor who's exactly like me. In fact, when I changed sponsors, a lot of people said, what? That doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Who I have for a sponsor is a wonderful human being, Lee. We are completely polar opposites. I need to be constantly taken out of my comfort zone. I need to be constantly pushed into different directions, because if I get complacent and if I get comfortable, good things don't happen. I said this quote at one meeting because I like quotes, like I said. And it actually pissed a few people off, but they're gonna have to deal with it. I said, the safest place for a ship to exist is the harbor, but that's not what ships were built for. And that's me. The safest place for me can be in my house, isolated. That's a safe place. I guess I won't get hurt and stuff, but that's definitely not what I was built for. I was built for it. I didn't get sober to sit around and play things safe. I got sober to experience what this world has and what opportunities are out there and to push myself. And that's not always easy for a guy like me. I want to isolate. I want to be alone. I want to find three or four good friends and then call it a day. But that's not what I can do. It's not what I was built for. I was built to be sober, to love sobriety. And there's another thing. I hear a lot of you wonderful people say, I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I love that. But I'm not as much a grateful alcoholic as I am grateful that I have alcoholism. I am thrilled that I have alcoholism. If any of you see alcoholism as a curse and, oh no, I can't drink again, we're not gonna relate, because I am so glad I can't drink again. I am so thrilled that I'm an alcoholic, because nothing else in this world, nothing would have been as hard enough to pivot me back towards the light. I had to have an explosion. I had to have things go haywire. I had to be so toxic in order to move, because I do not make changes. Some of you guys that come in these rooms and say, I'm sick of being sick and tired and I'm coming in on my own volition. How do you do that? I can't do it. I have to be forced in with my arm behind my back. Pretty much the same way I got forced to go to college. I have to be forced to do it, and alcoholism is the only thing that I could see that could ever force me into this type of a lifestyle, which I adore. I adore everyone in this room. I hope that you find something that you need to stay sober. If you don't, just keep coming back until you do, because it'll happen. And that little saying that I rolled my eyes at before, don't leave 10 seconds before the miracle happens, is gosh darn true. Stick around. These people love you. You'll learn to love yourself, and all of a sudden, your world will flip in ways that you can't even imagine. That's all I got.
Thank you, Kevin. That was great. Let's give him another round. Belisa also. There's Belisa.